From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We're having some telephone difficulties, so I'm having a bit of a time getting a hold of my guest. Why? Because my phone is dead, and I'm waiting for a line to get back up and running, or at least the phone company to tell me what the problem is. I do apologize. We do plan on continuing on with the live show tonight, and if you bear with us and just listen to the pre-recorded music for a few minutes, we should be back with some sort of an answer here in the next couple of seconds. This has only happened to me once or twice in 11 years of doing shows, and it is embarrassing for sure. But this is Scared Monkeys Radio. We had planned on bringing on Robin Sachs and Diane Diamond tonight to talk about Michael Jackson. Diane Diamond, you'll know, is a investigative reporter, crime reporter. She's worked on every network out there. She's written a couple of books about Michael Jackson, including a recent article on the Women in Crime blog called The Enigma That Was Michael Jackson. Of course, you know Robin Sachs is a regular on the program. She has some breaking news for you, and it has to do with something she said about Michael Jackson. So there's lots to talk about tonight, including victims advocate Alexis Moore a little bit later on, talking about domestic violence. But in order to do that, we have to have a working telephone, and the telephone is dead as a doornail. So we will take a quick break, and we'll be back here in a few minutes and hopefully be able to continue on with the show. I do apologize for the delay. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. One thing you can say about my next guest is she is never boring. You never know where she is, and her life changes about as much as the clock that I'm looking at on the wall. Her name is Robin Sachs. Hi, Robin.
Hi there. How are you, Dana?
You know, this has been a strange night. It's been a strange week for you. Maybe strange isn't the word. What's happening? I understand. You see, I told you that you should be exclusive just on my show, and you would never get yourself in trouble, and you go out and you go on to another show, and something happened. Tell us about it.
You know what? I actually, if I could clock you through the phone right now, I think I would, because I didn't get myself in trouble.
Okay.
You know, that is the perception out there. And it's actually the yoke is on everybody and not on me at this point, because it's actually catapulted me into stardom for the week, I guess.
No, listen. Hold on a second. I'm going to cut you off. You could clock me through the phone. You know how much respect I have. And when I said the getting yourself in trouble, I was saying it with a smile on my face and a song in my heart, because I think it's nonsense. Tell us the real story. What's going on?
Okay. Well, actually, as you know, Dana Pretzer, who has the opportunity to speak with me off camera often,
yes,
off air often. And it's no secret to anybody that one of the things that I have been doing for the last couple of years is been pursuing my interest in justice and pursuing doing what is right beyond that of just a courtroom. One of the things about being in court, as you know, is you make a difference 12 jurors at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend weeks and weeks and weeks, and you prep cases and you organize cases, and then you present a case, and then the next thing you know, the case is over, and no one has been there from the public, no one's been there from the media, and there's so many lessons to be learned that go ignored because they're not covered by television or radio. So what I decided was I wanted to use my experience as a prosecutor to help make a difference in people's lives.
Absolutely.
And to not just be limited to the 12 jurors in the box and the witnesses in the courtroom, but really try to get out there. And more importantly, getting out there beyond the courtroom would mean that hopefully some of those people would never see a courtroom. As you know, when something happens in a courtroom, it means the crime has already occurred. Someone has been hurt. Someone's been injured. It's happened. It's done. So I thought, listen, there's so many things that I've seen. There's so many cases that I know about. There's so much stuff that happens that if we can inform and educate the public, perhaps we can save some people from being victimized.
Right.
So along those lines, I decided to write some books, write some articles, do some TV, do some radio, all with the blessings and support of the Los Angeles County DA's office and Mr. Cooley himself. And the DA's office has been, it's been absolutely wonderful to me, actually, in terms of supporting my endeavors, allowing me to continue my work and to do what I wanted to do so long as I was able to balance my duties.
Robin, can I just interrupt you for a quick second? And we're going to take a quick break, and I want the audience to stand by for an important announcement from Robin Sachs. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. And again, sorry about the difficulties and the phone difficulties, too. Robin Sachs is here. You'll know her as a author, a victims advocate, former DA, and we'll get into that in a minute with Los Angeles County. And it's a big kick to have Diane Diamond here. We talked about her earlier tonight. We were trying to get her online. We do now. You'll know her work with CNN, Headline News, Fox News, you name it, it's everywhere. And I happened to be looking at an article on the Women in Crime blog the other day, and I saw one called The Enigma That Was Michael Jackson. And it's a big kick. Hi, Diane. How are you?
Dana, how are you? With the power of technology, I'm with you.
Well, yeah, it's, and again, my apologies to everyone. And Robin Sachs, you two know each other. Diane, I want you to sit back for a second. And Robin was sharing a little something with me in the audience about her and something to do with Michael Jackson. I think this whole story is spread right around now to our friend Robin. Robin, keep going.
Okay, my pleasure. So as I was saying, I was pursuing my book, media, and different avenues for advocating on behalf of victims. And I had a book, my Predators and Child Molesters book, that was to be released or was released in April of this last year in 2009. And at that time, in March, actually, I had went to the district attorney and filed my official resignation from the DA's office at that time, citing my reason being that I wanted to make a difference in people's lives on a more macro level through media, through being an author, and television and so forth. And I had packed up all my stuff. I had a goodbye party. I had a plaque was made for me, all the, you know, bells and whistles of a retirement. And the last step was the exit interview with one of the directors within the DA's office. And when I was in the exit interview and we were checking the list of here's your, you know, your parking card back and here's your badge back and ID back, that director said to me, you know, some people don't make it in media and you're a great member of the team here. And have you given any consideration to going on a leave of absence in the alternative of a resignation? And thinking that I was probably one of the biggest fools in this economy to quit their job, thought, you know, that may not be such a bad idea. Always good to keep an eye open, and that sounds like a good plan. And he said, well, you go pursue your media, see what happens, and we will see you in September.
Right.
So fast forward now. Throughout the summer, I've been doing exactly that. I've been doing media appearances. I've been flying all over the place, speaking. You know, we've spoken on planes, trains, and automobiles. And and like everyone else, have been following the Michael Jackson case and actually received a phone call from a Larry King producer last Friday about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and was on my way over to Larry King and did my appearance there. And actually, not even for a moment did I think that there was a problem in terms of me appearing on Larry King because of my affiliation with the DA's office. Not to say that I did not know that there was an agreement between me and the DA's office that I wouldn't comment on LA cases. That actually wasn't a specific agreement as to me. That's the office policy.
Mm-hmm.
But all the reports that I had been following was that it was the Attorney General's office that was handling the case.
Right.
Those the folks that were spearheading the case. So I, because of that, I felt pretty confident that the LA DA's office was not handling the case, was by the Attorney General's office and all the other Alphabet groups that were involved. And I went about doing the show. I was on Larry King for about an hour, you know, I was on the whole time, and then got a call on Monday from the district attorney's office. And to be honest with you, in the moment that I got the call, because there had been other rumors that they may want me to come back early to pursue some other cases, I thought that the message was telling me that my leave of absence was going to be over or that I needed to plan on coming back soon and that kind of thing.
Right.
And and I was surprised when it was a message from the same director that I had my exit interview with.
Oh, good God.
So continuing with my long, sad story here, or my long story, basically he said to me on the phone, you know, you were on Larry King, and I said yes, and he said, you did a great job, and he thought that I made some good points, and he said, and you didn't say anything that hurt the DA's office in any way, and I don't see any problem with what you said. You actually did a very nice job. Clearly you like doing this. But you can't talk about Michael Jackson cases because it's a case that our office is handling, and it looks like you are on behalf of our office.
Mm.
So I apologized, of course. I took responsibility for, you know, what I did and my error, and I told him, you know, that I thought the AG's office was handling it. And he said, okay, so, you know, I want to have a long career with you in the DA's office, so just don't talk about Michael Jackson anymore. And I said, okay, and I kind of said okay just like that and thought about it for a second. And thought, you know, and that was just kind of where I was, because what my boss at the time did not know was there was about three or four other emails and voicemails from different people wanting to book me for different shows. And the whole goal was to get out in the media my earlier resignation. I was going to have to pass up on personal opportunities for myself. And so I thought about it. And I realized that the whole, you know, I was going to stay within the DA's office so long as I could do both ventures and do what I wanted to do. But as soon as one was going to get in the way of the other and the DA's office getting in the way of my other stuff, I thought that it would be time to, you know, call it a resignation. So I found myself driving to Headline News for Showbiz Tonight, emailing my boss saying, you know what, I won't be coming back. I'm going to make this a permanent resignation. And he sent me a lovely email back saying, thank you for your wonderful service. I got a personal email or a letter from Mr. Cooley himself. And then the coup was that apparently someone in the DA's office leaked, you know, a non-story story to the LA Times, making it appear as though I was either forced to resign or I'd gotten fired or something of the sort.
Okay.
And at first I was kind of, you know, irritated with the whole story and with the reporter's take on how he was going to spin it, although he was, you know, plugged my book. I guess that was nice. but the biggest coup out of the whole thing was it has catapulted me into the media.
Yeah.
It's gotten me, you know, onto other places where I never can. And the funny thing is no one wants to talk to me about the job part of it. Now they want to use me for my legal background and knowledge for the case in general, which is exactly what I want to do. So, right?
Let's go to Diane Diamond.
Big time. You know how I know it's big time was that I was on Perez Hilton.
Yeah, there. Oh, my God. Listen, let's go to Diane Diamond, who's been covering Michael Jackson since 93. Robin Sachs is your friend. Let's talk about her a little bit. Is she doing the right thing, or is she crazy?
Well, no, she's not crazy. She's a wise, smart, intelligent, fabulous woman. And I'll tell you, the DA's office is going to lose one hell, can I say that, one hell
yes.
of an advocate for sexual abuse victims, especially children. And I'm so sorry for that. However, what is it, Robin? 15 years, 17 years you've been doing this?
Right, yes, just about 15 years between Riverside County and LA.
How much more can we ask of one person to go in every single day
yep.
and hear these horrific stories of child molestation and sexual abuse and then sit with the victims and pull the stories out and convict the perpetrators? And, you know, 15 years, that's enough. You've earned your right, and of course everybody's after you.
Yep.
You know, there's hardly a prosecutor's office around that will let a sitting prosecutor help the media explain to the public how cases work.
Mm-hmm.
It's very frustrating as a reporter and as an anchor of some of these programs. Right now I'm on Entertainment Tonight and The Insider doing the Jackson story, but I've sat as an anchor and just begged for prosecutors, come on, and don't talk about the specific case, but just tell me, how does it work?
Yep.
And it's Robin is a breath of fresh air, and she's going to be fabulous, and she's probably going to have her own show soon.
Yes, so. I agree totally. In fact, yeah. I've been saying that for a long time, and I was going to ask you, Diane, what you thought of that, because the defense lawyers can come on and say what they want, but the prosecutors are always former. They can't be, involved. And Robin and I have been doing shows for a number of years now, and she's always strayed away from talking about cases. In fact, she's given me hell a couple times because I've asked some questions. But I think she's done the right thing. I think there's a lot to go on this. But the reason I brought you on, Diane, is the story in Women in Crime, and I know you've written a couple of books about Michael Jackson. We'll get into that in a little bit. But the enigma that was Michael Jackson, obviously you're earning a paycheck right now because of him and, of course, your talent. But this story has gone every direction that it possibly can. Entertainer, great, yep. Sold lots of records, of course, yep. But there's always that other side, and we're just not hearing that, or at least not much of that. And it's a pleasure to have you come on, Diane and Robin, to talk about this person because there was another side to him. Your thoughts, Diane?
Yes, and, in the days, even the day of the memorial, I was at the Staples Center inside, and I came out to some of my colleagues who wanted to pick my brain about it and wanted to talk about the 93 case and the 2003 case that I broke. And, I just said to them, today is not the day for that. Today is the day everybody said goodbye to him. If you want to read my book, it'll tell you all about it. But I think now that some time has passed, it's very smart of us to take a big deep breath and realize what we've all just been through. We've been through an enormous period of hero worship.
Yep.
That may have been a little bit astray. I mean, if you don't buy, then, and he was acquitted, let's remember, Michael Jackson was acquitted of the charges of child molestation. If you don't buy that he might have been guilty of that, well, here was a man who was a self-admitted drug abuser.
Mm-hmm.
He went into rehab. He carved up his face. He had body dysmorphic disorder. He, I maintain, had anorexia, and I think the autopsy will prove me out on that. He was a man who literally bought three children. And I'm not passing any judgment on it. I'm saying this may not be the man, as Al Sharpton says, we ought to get him a postage stamp.
Yeah.
Not so much.
No.
I'm just thinking maybe not so much. Could he sing and dance and entertain like nobody else on the planet? You bet.
Mm-hmm.
But should he be held up as a deity and the best entertainer in the whole wide world ever and ever? Amen. No.
No.
I mean, not to me, no. I know too much, I guess. And having said all of that, Dana, I will tell you, I believe that Michael Jackson was just a tortured, tortured soul.
Yeah.
I think it started in his childhood. I think he broke away and began to make his own decisions and didn't have any basis to make good decisions. And he made some really bad, bad, bad decisions, including taking too many drugs and sleeping with too many other people's young sons.
Yeah, no, exactly. Diane Diamond and Robin Sachs are here. Robin, one thing about this now is I guess you can talk about Michael Jackson and come on shows. And, of course, you and I and I think it was Wendy Murphy a couple of weeks ago were talking about this. And the whole story and what you said on Larry King, there's a lot of speculation going out there. Obviously, there's an investigation going on out there. You're seeing the doctors. I'm going to ask Diane a little bit about this Arnie Klein character. But we've heard this, Robin Sachs, about Michael Jackson's going back to 93. In fact, it was alleged that he even traveled down to Mexico to have his, privates altered a little bit so they couldn't be identified in court. Your thoughts on this whole story? It's a lot older than what we're looking at right now, correct?
First of all, there are many aspects of the story, and I echo a lot of what Diane mentioned, and I think that the country and the world has been grieving for Michael Jackson's loss. And one of the things that I think that happens within grief as a way to be able to understand it, digest it, is that we look to the most comforting memories, the most comforting story, the most comforting aspect of a person's life. So I don't blame society necessarily, or the truly grieving members of society, for holding on for dear life for the good and the good memories. However, for some of us who have been who make their lives and who have made their careers, like I have, of protecting the children, I have purposefully, and I think I've done a good job of it, of separating the two different Michael Jacksons that we know. I mean, there's Michael Jackson, the entertainer, the most phenomenal, amazing dancer, you know, choreographer, singer that, you know, probably, you know, at least through my generation of time existed. I can understand all of the you know, fabulousness that followed his entertainment abilities, but he's also one of the been in my mind, and while the you know, while he was acquitted, the acquittal to me is doesn't mean to me that children were safe in his presence. And I think that there's a variety of reasons and sadness and history that may have caused him to be the person that he was. And clearly he was a tormented, troubled individual with many disorders and diseases and suffered much abuse. But I also think that that translated to him acting inappropriately to children, which, you know, I think that we always have to keep the protection of children at the forefront of our minds. So as we look at his death, I look at this as a reminder that we do need to deal with the growing epidemic of child sexual assault and how we look at people. I think that if we shoo all of his past underneath the rug, then we're doing exactly what child molesters out there want us to do, and that's to ignore the problem.
Yeah, that's for sure. Diane Diamond, going back to 93 and covering this as much as you have, and seeing some of the characters from then being brought up now, the media likes to use the term enabler. I think that's a good one. One group says this, the other group says that. I have to commend Harvey Levin and the group at TMZ because they've covered the story pretty well. Some media organizations haven't. You've done a great job with it. But let's get into the story a little bit, Diane. Going back to 93 and the connection with some of these guys that are still out there now, like Arnie Klein.
Well, Dr. Klein has been around Michael Jackson for 25 years, and I think when all is said and done, his attorney can say whatever he wants. Oh, my client is not a subject in this investigation. Pish tosh. He certainly is. He is right in the bullseye of this target. And you know what? I have discovered, Dana, that so are a lot of other people in his past. I won't name any names, but Robin probably knows who I'm talking about. There was an appointment secretary who you could not get onto Neverland Ranch unless you went through this woman. And when Michael Jackson needed a package delivered or a prescription delivered, she made sure it got to him no matter where he was in the world. There were security guards, there were bodyguards, there were chauffeurs, there has been a whole cadre of people around Michael Jackson who suspected what he was doing and went ahead and helped him do it anyway. And I'm speaking specifically about getting illegal drugs, narcotic drugs that really, I think, shortened his life. You know, he's only 50 years old, and he was athletic, and he was a dancer, and he should have lived for a long, long time. His grandfather lived to be 100, you know. So I think I'm really looking for the toxicology report to come out, and I don't think it will come right away. I think they're going to wait and do the whole brain scan, which takes, 4 to 6 weeks. And I think that what we'll find is that in the end, the enablers may have enabled him, but it was Michael Jackson who killed Michael Jackson.
Yeah. No.
You know, I'd be really interested to hear what Robin has to say about the whole thing. And I agree with you with TMZ and Harvey Levin. They've gotten a few things wrong.
Yep.
They declared that Debbie Rowe was not the mother.
Right.
Another pish-tosh on that. She is certainly the biological mother of those two children. But they've been terrific. They've been right out in front. And they've been saying, Robin, that this really is a homicide investigation. They're looking at the the misuse of prescriptions and what Michael Jackson got from what doctors, and if they can link a drug to a doctor, we do have a homicide investigation, don't we?
Well, it depends. If they can link a drug to a doctor that comes out in the toxicology, that we can show that that drug was part of the cause of Michael Jackson's death, then we have a possible homicide.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another potential homicide theory.
Do you think that they'll pursue it, Bell Robin? You've been in that office. Will they pursue that?
I think what they're doing right now is covering every avenue for, doing as thorough of a job as they can, so that they're employing the no stone goes unturned approach, so that no one can say that it wasn't looked at thoroughly, that it wasn't thought out thoroughly. But just based on how I know, homicide cases with prescription drugs and drugs of any sort to be in terms of the causation, and then when you add the number of doctors that were involved in the case, and over the period of time, there's going to be a question is which medication was, the lethal medication, if that was the lethal medication, or do we have something along the lines of a failure to call 911 and administering CPR on a bed as being a failure to act with the correct regard for human life and have an involuntary on Dr. Conrad Murray based on that.
I got to ask you.
Either once you have the toxicology, but there are other aspects I think that they're going to look at in terms of the totality of the circumstances with regards to Dr. Murray specifically.
But I think Robin and Diane, that's where the media is failing a little bit when they hear, and yes, I agree with TMZ that they're not really covering all that where they say it's a homicide. People are going to think homicide, oh, murder. Talk about that, Robin, and then we'll go to Diane about the where you say it, maybe to explain what causation and premeditation is. You're looking at the Anna Nicole Smith case is another one where, enablers allegedly had too many drugs and all that sort of stuff. But there's a difference between taking a gun and shooting someone than injecting them with an anesthesia, or is there?
Well, there is. First of all, the law of homicide, it breaks up, different types of deaths based on, and we hear about first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and then voluntary manslaughter and involuntary manslaughter are the four most common felony charges that are available for a prosecutor in a homicide situation. Sometimes DAs, prosecutors, will make the decision that we're going to charge it as a first-degree murder and then let the judge instruct or give instructions on lesser crimes and let the jury say, no, it's not first-degree murder, it's something else. It's second-degree murder, it's manslaughter, it's something else. Or they can take a much more calculated approach and decide what it is. In this case, if they were at this point to make a decision of what it is, and if we were looking at, say, one of the doctors as being the suspect, the prime suspect, it would automatically rule out voluntary manslaughter by definition. Voluntary manslaughter by definition is the heat of passion killing. It's a killing like when you see a situation where, you walk in and you see your wife having sex with another man and you kill him or you kill her. It's a heat of passion. There was no specific intent. It was something that happened under those circumstances. Then you would look at what's left, and it's first-degree murder. And first-degree murder is specific intent to kill. It's premeditated. It's deliberate. It's something that's planned. It's something, or it's something that's done, a killing that happens while there's a commission of some other dangerous felony. So, for example, there's like a carjacking, and someone, while stealing the car, ends up getting killed, and that could be charged as first-degree murder. There are theories, and I've heard speculation from other reporters out there and from different analysts out there, that there could be first-degree murder based on the failure to call 911 in 20 minutes, that was enough sufficient time for deliberate calculation of not to do anything to help his life. That would equate specific intent to kill. I think that's pretty heavy-handed prosecution, unlikely something we're going to see in his office.
Can I just interrupt there, Robin, and ask you about first-degree murder? Because you said first-degree murder is when you are in the commission of another crime. So if there was Diprovan, propofol, being administered to Michael Jackson in his home, if, that's a hospital drug. That should not be in anybody's home. That is a crime and then he dies? So would that be enough of a felony crime?
It has to be in order to work for the felony murder rule to apply, which is that kind of death, there must be a felony type of crime. And I don't know, and this is why you're seeing the DEA involved, and this is why we're going to see a change in legislation in the future, because of how the classifications of drugs are and because of how it depends where they fall on the schedule and which prescriptive drug schedule, you know, these hospital-strength drugs fall. And this is such an unusual drug, you know, an anesthetic drug as opposed to a narcotic, per se. That is exactly what and why the DA's office is waiting for the toxicology to see what other underlying felonies that may be there that may give rise to a first-degree murder.
You know, Diane, go ahead. Ask your question.
No, I just said, I see. It's so interesting to get to question Robin on the record like this.
Yep.
You know, usually we're sitting having a nice dinner with a glass of wine, and I don't think to ask these kind of tough questions, so thank you, Dana.
No, and I'm glad you do that.
I love this. Are you kidding?
That's why I brought you on.
Later.
And Diane, I was going to ask you that question. See, that's the excellent reporter in you. You actually read my mind. Is when you're able to sit down with someone like Robin Sachs now, who is able to voice her opinion a little bit more than she's been able to, as a host of a show or as someone who's been an interviewer, and you have these quote-unquote correspondents or talking heads or whatever who are sometimes limited to say what they can say, sometimes or slanted to say what they can say. But when you have someone like Robin who could come on and, like Jack Webb used to say, just say the facts, just the facts, ma'am, isn't that a breath of fresh air?
Oh, it is, because I'll tell you, I have been around so many media pundits who they talk in these cute little quippy sound bites, and at the end of the day or at the end of the show, you take your microphone off and you think to yourself, what the heck did they just say? Nothing. But Robin's not like that. I can really ask Robin questions and really get at the real answers sometimes. So it's usually off the record, and this is on the record, so that's great. Hey, Robin, here's another question. Don't you think that they already had that psychology report? They know what killed Michael Jackson. They're probably just waiting for the brain scans, right?
My guess is that there are preliminary reports that have already been turned over. It's confirmatory results that they're waiting for now. I think that they're all very, it's all on the down low with, you know, maybe phone call conversations. But I do think that there's some preliminary analysis that's been done, and that would be my guess.
One last question, Diane. I'm going to give you the last word, but I have one last question. And for those of you that are tuning in a little bit late, Robin Sachs is here and Diane Diamond talking about Michael Jackson. Diane, we talked about the cast of characters. There's some that just haven't said anything who were involved many years ago but are keeping quiet now. Are we going to see and hear more from them as time goes on once the cause of death is released?
Well, that's a really, really good question. You know, there is a erroneous report out on the internet that both of the young men, now they're young men, but young boys who made allegations against Michael Jackson, Jordan Chandler in 93, Gavin Arvizo in 2003, that they have recanted their testimony. Nothing could be further from the truth. They are among those that you mentioned, Dana, who haven't said a word. I traced back those comments on the internet that, oh, yeah, the boys have recanted their testimony. Mm-hmm. And all of those reports go back to a Michael Jackson website. They're trying to rewrite history. You know, look, will people come forward and start speaking whereas they've been silent all these years? I don't know. You know, there was a very concerted effort to make people sign confidentiality agreements and to scare people into silence. And for those out there who think, well, there were only two boys. If he was really a pedophile, where are all the other victims? I'm here to tell you, there were other victims. And you could read about them in my book, or there's a lot of other resources out there. Stacey Brown wrote a book about it, for example.
Well, everyone should get your book. I have to plug it, Diane, because I bought it on Kindle last night, actually. because I'm like, I need to read Diane's book. We've talked about it a bunch of times, but it is fantastic. It's readable. It's got the inside scoop and skinny from you who you broke the story. You sat there. You've been involved with the family. You know more of the ins and outs than just about anyone I know, and it was really great reading.
Diane Diamond on Entertainment Tonight and The Insider, and Robin Sachs on this show, Justice Interrupted, on the Today Show tomorrow, and watch for her on a lot of shows coming up. Listen, ladies, I hate to cut you off right now, but I appreciate it, and we'll do another show again real soon. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Diane.
Okay, bye-bye.
Me too. Bye-bye.
That's Diane Diamond and Robin Sachs. And again, I have to apologize to the listeners for our phone trouble earlier. We could have had the both of them on a little bit longer. We'll be back in a few minutes here on Scared Monkeys Radio with Alexis Moore, who's a domestic violence expert. And we want to talk about a special letter that's been written. We'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Okay, we're back. Again, my apologies to those of you that tuned in late and had to listen to me go through all my phone calls. Lynn Rosenthal has been appointed White House advisor on violence against women. And you all know, if you listen to my program, that I am an advocate for victims of domestic violence, for anyone who has anything to do to help prevent the problem. The plague, I'm going to use that term, of domestic violence. And, of course, you'll know Alexis Moore as a violence expert and a regular on our program. Hi, Alexis.
Hi, Dana. Good evening.
Again, sorry for running a little bit late with you this evening. Let's talk about, appointments by government sometimes can be just empty rhetoric. Just let's appoint someone. They may not know what they're doing, but we're going to appoint them anyway. Is this going to be a good appointment?
You know, I hope so. That's the talk of the town on the net and everywhere in the papers all across the world, really. We have an opportunity here for this appointment of Lynn Rosenthal to be a positive. But as we all know, far too often government does appoint these sorts of folks, and they basically just are appointed and become dead in the water, so to speak. They're just a hierarchy, a term, another position in the government, another body of government, but nothing ever results from it that's positive. So I'm hoping, in fact, this will be a positive for victims. They desperately need the help.
Now, it was the 26th of June, 2009, Vice President Biden named Lynn Rosenthal as White House advisor on violence against women. Rosenthal has championed the movement against domestic violence and sexual violence for three decades. When I hear that, now this is just me, a little bit of skeptic in me, I hear the government talk, yet when I bring on advocates like yourself and others and do the shows that we've done with the victims and the court workers and you name it, on and on and on, it seems like, yeah, there's a concern, but then when you have the states and you have different rules in the states, and some states handle it this way, some states handle it that way, and again, it's a problem not only just in the United States but North America. Governments can talk the talk, but sometimes they don't walk the walk.
Exactly, and when we're talking about a government position, we know there's bureaucracy, we know there's a lot that goes on that far too often doesn't end up in positive results reaching those in need, which are the victims. But the reason and the purpose of the open letter to Lynn Rosenthal that I put out there, and it's an SOS. It's a desperation move on my part because I know all too well what it's like to be a victim of domestic violence and to not have resources available to me. I mean, being turned away from a shelter in 2004 because of my batterer's occupation, I thought that was going to end. I started Survivors in Action in 2007 hoping that I could do some good and make a difference, but sadly today, Dana, I have thousands of women and men who are victims of domestic violence who are falling through the cracks, and this is unacceptable because it's a matter of life or death. So let's hope, you know, Lynn Rosenthal, if you're listening, or those that are working in government, you've got mail, and we need help because the victims out there are desperately in need, and it is a matter of life or death.
I think it's so important, and make sure and send a link for this show to her so she can listen. And in your letter, You open it very well. It says, as you're aware, domestic violence is a matter of life and death for millions of women. There's simply no excuse for domestic violence resources to fail to assist victims in need. It's resources is a lot of this. Let's talk about the lack thereof, because mostly that's what it is.
It amounts to that, Dana, but you know what it also amounts to, more importantly, is accountability. you and I, everyone out there listening, we all have jobs. You know, we don't do our job, we fail, or if we go and hide in our cubicles, somebody sooner or later notices, and they get rid of us. But what I'm finding more and more is that in particular with domestic violence resources, there's nobody out there holding anyone accountable. And I say this from personal experience because in 2004 when I was turned away, I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. I was turned away. There was no number for me to call or any complaint process for me to file any sort of grievance. And I was astonished that these resources are going about their business, so to speak, without any accountability. This is ridiculous, especially when it's a matter of life or death. And that's why that letter to me is, it's just a heartfelt plea. I mean, anyone listening tonight, if you're in a political position to help get the message to this new White House advisor, we need her to listen, and we need more than talk and rhetoric and bureaucracy. We actually need to help the victims, and the time is now, today.
I couldn't agree more. One thing, Alexis, just before I let you go, that caught my eye in the letter is the advocacy of creating a federal domestic violence oversight committee. Tell us what that's about.
Absolutely. Just months ago, a collaborative, there's a group of us from across the nation that is working together. I'm the leader, spearheading it, so to speak, with Survivors in Action. But we are forming what we're calling a national federal domestic violence oversight committee. And there is nothing like this because we're going to be the watchdog for the victims and allow their voices to be heard. And we are going to start holding those organizations that are federally and state funded accountable. And so, again, if you're listening to this program and you have been a victim or you know someone that has, who's had a situation like mine where the resources have failed, or like millions of victims like myself, I'm alive to speak about it. But sadly, there's millions of women and children who are not. So hopefully the family members and those that are aware of this problem will reach out to me via Survivors in Action and sign on in support and get involved, because our voices do matter. And I'm finding, thankfully, I mean, it's amazing, truthfully, that I am getting response. Of course, not yet from Lynn Rosenthal and the White House, but we are able to get the response that I never imagined would happen. And that means the media is actually taking a peek into this. So I'm hoping that sooner or later it will be a hot-button issue that will make press headlines everywhere and save lives, because that's what needs to happen. And today is definitely the time. Now is the time.
That's what this is all about. Give a plug for your website, Alexis.
You bet. SurvivorsInAction.com. And also alexisamore.blogspot.com. You can catch all the latest public safety news there. And Dana, again, thank you so much, and for the Scared Monkeys crew for having me this evening on the program.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Alexis Moore. And, yeah, if we can't help victims of domestic violence or victims of violence, I don't know who we can help. Well, that's it. That's another show. This one is... as choppy as it was, we put it in the can. Hopefully it won't flush it down it. No, actually, it was a very good show. Thanks to Robin Sachs, Diane Diamond, and Alexis Moore, and, of course, you, the listener, here at Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.